This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
WNYC Studios is supported by W.W. Norton & Company, publishers of The Road to Freedom, Economics and the Good Society, by Nobel Prize-winning economist Joseph E. Stiglitz. The Road to Freedom, essential reading for those committed to the American ideal of an economic and political system that delivers well-being, opportunity, and meaningful freedoms for all. The Road to Freedom, available now wherever books are sold.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
I'm going to turn things over now to our television critic, Emily Nussbaum, who's got a few words, maybe more than a few, about a show that she's been watching very, very carefully.
So one of the shows that I'm really excited about is Watchmen on HBO. And this is a drama that's an update. It's a response to, a sequel to, this graphic novel that came out in the 1980s. It's pretty impossible to describe the book, but it's about a group of masked crime fighters. And it's set during a period of enormous nuclear threat. And it delves into ideas about American imperialism, the notion of superheroes as a cathartic fantasy of American strength, all of that kind of thing. And the HBO show is set about 30 years later, in 2019. And it also uses superhero characters, but the central subject matter is different. It's very much about race and the traumatic history of that in America, specifically the way that those stories have been repressed, ignored, and wiped out of people's memories. Damon Lindelof is the showrunner of Watchmen, and he is best known for having created Lost and The Leftovers, two very different shows, but two shows which share the qualities of being kind of chopped up chronologies, puzzle box shows, and also shows about big social traumas that affect enormous amounts of people. But they're precursors to this new show that's about a different kind of social trauma and social catastrophe. I recently wrote about Watchmen, and I was excited to talk to Lindelof about it, in part because it's one of the most exciting, audacious new shows this year. Hi, Damon.
Hey, Emily. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am well.
I have to say, when I was watching the show, the way that I saw it, it felt both like a sequel, which is set 30 years after the original events, that's simultaneously a celebration of the original and also kind of a critique of it along racial lines. And there's one episode that really gets at this. It's probably my favorite episode of the season, This Extraordinary Being. And in it, one of your new characters, Angela Abar, played by Regina King, flashes back in time and she experiences the memories of her grandfather, who was a masked crime fighter in the 1930s.
What color are those townsfolk?
White.
Tell me, what happened to the Dreamland Theater, where you watched that picture over and over while your mama played the piano? What the Klan and the fine white citizens of Tulsa do?
They burned it down.
You ain't gonna get justice with a badge, Will Reeves. You're gonna get it with that hood. And if you wanna stay a hero, townsfolk gonna need to think one of their own's under it.
One of the things that that episode does is it does this remarkable thing to the whole narrative of Watchmen, which is that there's a character named Hooded Justice, who in the original is coded in all sorts of ways as white. And in this episode, you do a big reveal. You show that Hooded Justice is actually a black man. And I want to talk to you about, like, where did that idea come from? Like, trace that for me.
Well, you're very familiar with the phrase retcon.
Yes.
And for those who aren't, it's short for retroactive continuity. It's when you go back and you change something as a storyteller that is pretty much like not the way that it was originally intended. We knew that there was a paradox before us, which was that we wanted to treat the original text as canon, but in order to tell a story about race, we had to do this massive piece of retcon. And Hooded Justice was an ancillary character in the original Watchmen. He's really only mentioned a couple of times and seen maybe two or three times, but he had this unique distinction of being the first one to put on a mask and fight crime. And he actually inspired all these other heroes. And I was like, this is really interesting because in a comic book where all is revealed, almost every mystery is answered, every masked hero is unmasked, Alan Moore decided to never tell us who Hooded Justice was. I've obsessed on that question in a really good way over the course of the last three decades. And this was something that I just always wondered about. Not who was he, but why wasn't his identity revealed to us? And when I was thinking about all these things, about what I wanted Watchmen to be about, all of those ideas sort of culminated to, oh, I understand why Hooded Justice was never unmasked, because if people knew who he really was, they would have killed him. They would have murdered him. So in the late 30s, the idea of an African-American man fighting crime with a mask on, he would never be revered as a hero. They would have lynched this guy. And so we all agree that the only way to do this would be to put a lot of diversity in front of and behind the camera, not to engage in a certain level of tokenism, but to really build a writer's room where white dudes were underrepresented. And so that's what we did.
Can you tell me a little bit about that, one of those conversations in the writer's room? Because I know that you'd said you were specifically looking for writers who were skeptical of your instincts, which interested me. So, and you've talked about how there were what you said were bad ideas that you were talked out of. Like, what were the conversations like in the writer's room?
You know, what I'll say is what happens in the writer's room has to stay in the writer's room. But because Cor Jefferson, who co-wrote the episode that you were referencing earlier, episode 6, which really kind of leans hardest in some of these issues, I saw him talk about this in an interview. And so I think it's appropriate to tell the story, which is, I think one of the things that I was saying was, I don't ever want to use the N-word in this season of Watchmen, because I don't like, it's my position that as a white person, I don't ever want to use that word, and even on the page. I don't want to write it. I don't want it to appear in any of my shows. And Cord and a number of the other writers of color in the room basically said, we had to use that word. To not use it was even worse than using it. And we did in that episode. It's the one time that it's uttered in the entire season, and I think maybe that gives it maximum power.
Why are your stories so full of con men? It's like a consistent theme on all of your shows, is the primal problem of trusting somebody and being inspired by them and being lured toward them and then being enormously betrayed. It happens on this show in a racial context, but it happens on all your shows. Where do you think that comes from?
I guess my therapist would tell you because I'm a con man, you know, and that actually, I'm not saying that to be cutesy. I think in terms of my storytelling, that's a little bit a part of what excites me. And I think that when you look at what the provenance of the term con man is, it's confidence man. And the reason that it's called confidence man is because in order for them to work their mojo on you, in order for you to act against your own best interests and allow yourself to be snookered by them, they have to create confidence in the idea that what they're selling is real. That's my favorite kind of storytelling. And so I've always really been attracted to stories about con men. One of my favorite movies of all time is The Music Man. And I think that this sort of idea of just pretend that you know how to teach people to how to play music, and lo and behold, they will play music at the end.
You know, in Watchmen, the person who initially gets conned, it feels, is Angela, who finds out that somebody that was a trusted friend and colleague to her is actually tied into white supremacy. She literally finds a Klan robe in his closet.
You said Crawford had skeletons in his closet, so I went and I looked in his fucking closet.
Oh, I didn't mean literally. What's this?
Did you put it there? Are you trying to set him up? Because that was really fucking easy to find.
Why did that feel like an important place to start her story?
Well, I think that's the fundamental idea or fear that exists in any relationship between potentially a white person and a black person from the perspective of the black person, which is this person really my friend or are they secretly a racist? I'm not saying that that is the case as a broad generalization, but as it was described to me, this sort of idea of we were really interested in trolling the idea of the white savior and taking an iconic cop figure like Don Johnson, who I worshipped and adored in Miami Vice, and then one of my first writing gigs was on Nash Bridges, and basically taking him and saying, you have a Klan robe hidden in your closet, you're still just as charming as Don Johnson is charming. And that is it's not necessarily a mask. Both things are true. You're still a super nice, funny guy. You also have a Klan robe in your closet. That's the idea that feels like very relevant to today's times.
The white supremacist group in the show, the 7th Cavalry, is devoted to one of the major characters from the 1980s comic named Rorschach, who I think a lot of people regard is in a strange way as the anti-heroic central character on the show, somebody that people look up to. And he's this quasi-fascist, strict law and order moralizing character. When you read it when you were 13, did you love Rorschach?
Yes. If you're a teenage boy, you love Rorschach because he's cool. His mask is cool. He breaks people's fingers. He has a code. He's going to be the one who solves the mystery. But I think the first time that it occurred to me was probably like in my mid-20s, where it's like, this guy, he's not highly problematic in terms of because he's a homophobe or a misogynist. It's highly problematic that I ever believed that he was meant to be the hero. And Alan Moore has talked about the idea that people would come up to him and tell him how much they loved Rorschach, and it would scare him. And so I wanted to take all of that and basically mix that into the appropriation stew and say, the actual Rorschach is dead and has been for multiple decades. But in our Watchmen, it's more interesting to think about the idea, the virality of Rorschach, and the idea that anybody who wanted to put on his mask could now define what they thought he was all about.
That's fascinating. I'm just sort of thinking to myself about what Rorschach means. Because, you know, when you read the book as a woman in your early 50s, it's like a very different kind of feeling. And it was hard for me to even get into the sort of teen boy worship of Rorschach because he has enormous pathos. But I could see the appeal, certainly, of him seeing things in black and white. On the casting thing and the way in which the whole show feels like a meditation on the notion of casting and diversity in casting and basically who gets to be the center of the story, I wondered whether you could talk a little bit about how that's changed for you during your time in making TV. I was really struck by the fact that certainly on Lost, when the show started, it was a whole different period in TV and the conversation was taking place at a different level.
I think that it's probably less about my thoughts changing as more as it is, it's a process. I kind of went into Lost feeling like patting myself on the back for how diverse the cast was. But the show really engaged more in tokenism than anything else. The predominant stories being told were about the white characters, and understanding that we were doing an 8 o'clock network show on ABC, it is a little bit odd that Michael and Walt and Rose were the only black people of 48 people on that entire island, and even more odd that the color of their skin was never really a significant issue. And so I just wasn't comfortable talking about or dealing with race. I think most white people aren't, and certainly most white writers aren't, and I'm not any more comfortable now than I was two decades ago. But that no longer became a viable excuse to not do it.
Well, it was great talking to you. Thank you again for doing
Same
this,
here.
And congratulations on the show.
Thanks.
The New Yorker's Emily Nussbaum talking with Damon Lindelof, creator and showrunner of Watchmen. The season finale of Watchmen airs Sunday, December 15th.